There's rainbows and rain here in the UK, but Discast reigns supreme over the conditions.
Yes, we're into double figures now. It's number 10 for October 2006.
Yes, hello and welcome. I'm John Coxhead.
I'm Joe McCrave, and this is number 10.
It certainly is. Well, we have a really actually cool episode today.
As ever.
But, Joe, you know, enlighten us. Or is it my turn?
Tricky one.
No, it must be your turn.
This wasn't prearranged beforehand. Right, yeah, it's my turn. Okay, so coming up in Discast episode 10 is the following. First of all, we'll have our two standard news segments. That starts with the world news and follows on with the FPA news. Coming next is our main interview. Now, can we have a cheer, John, in a sec? Because we have our first female interviewee on Discast for our main segment. And that is none other than Lisa Hunricks, a consistent high scorer and high placer on the rankings in the women's division, and one of the best women players of
all time.
Yeah, I'm gonna stretch.
Definitely
stretch to it. I'm gonna say one of the best women players ever, because she definitely is. So coming after that is the update on the world's most popular competition, Guess the Jammer. We'll have a recap on how that competition's shaping up and how it will be coming to its conclusion over the remaining 2 months in this year. Then we'll have a how-to section, and now this is a really special one, I think, personally, this month. It's Larry Imperiali, and he's sharing his knowledge and tips and wisdom and all of the above on mob hopping. So I think that should go really well. It's a great segment, and I know it's a topic that should be really popular on, because everyone likes to jam. It's mob hopping, really, is what jamming's all about, working together.
That's right.
Then I'll be presenting
great aspect of freestyle.
It is. So I'll be presenting after that our Frisbee fact for this month, and then we'll be off. It'll be conclusion, and it'll be goodbye.
It certainly will. But first, we have the world news from the past month. On October the 8th, in Berlin, Germany, the Berlin Hat Tournament took place, and this was won by Anton Kappelmann and Philipp Janke. Then, on the 15th of October, in California, actually, in San Ramon, the 2006 Plastic on Plastic Tournament took place. For any of you who aren't really informed on this event, well, it's a turbo shred event, meaning people play individually. It was judged only on difficulty, and the jams were of four players, and it's called Plastic on Plastic because they're actually playing on a really cushy, actually, artificial turf field. You know, plastic, and you know, well, shredding with plastic, so plastic on plastic. And this was won by Arthur Coddington. The following a very in-depth discussion on the Yahoo group Jammers on the Net.
Very in-depth.
The world's dates are now 99% confirmed. And it's looking like it's going to be the 21st to the 24th of June 2007. That's Thursday to Sunday. We hope as many people as possible can make it. And contrary to the original plan, the entire tournament will now take place on the beach on the outskirts of Amsterdam. And Ewan currently is planning for some form of red carpet for a playing surface. Just as a quick reminder for the rest of the summer's schedule, 2 weeks after the Worlds, in here in the UK, we have the NAS freestyle event. This is a really, as I've said before, a really good event. Tens of thousands of people in attendance. A great way to spread the jam. A really unique tournament. That's the 7th to the 8th of July, and then the following weekend is the WFDF over in the USA. And also this month, the FLO, that's the Israeli Freestyle Association, Freestyle Championships 2006 took place. The Israeli Championships, and this was won by Arnon Avitzur and Dori Yaniv in first place. Second place, now this is a really interesting pairing, Ofek Agmon and Yarden Barkow. Sorry for any mispronunciations, but they are only 14 and 16 years old, respectively. They managed to finish second, beating off some very established teams in the world of freestyle.
Some tough competition.
And the routine, you know, was apparently really very good as well. In third place was Aite Gal and Ayel Benin. And in fourth was Dan Lustiger, oh, as we all know as Lusty, and Dvir Sanella. So, yeah, even Lusty, you know, Lusty as well, another good young player there. And, of course, Omer Rosenbaum also took part and competed.
Yep.
With his partner, and another pair as well, I think. But they're the top four results. So promising young scene of freestyles over there in Israel. Yeah, that's certainly right.
Definitely. As we've heard before by Dory's account of the various training regimes they have over there.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Getting youngsters into the disc world.
Which, anybody who's interested, Discast Episode 2, check it out. And just for also out of interest, if you want to see the semi-final routines from the FLO Freestyle Championships, just log on to youtube.com and you can find the videos on there. The finals videos will be up shortly. That's the world news for this month.
Excellent. So John, tell me, as our resident discast expert on the schedule for 2007, what's your view on the world's dates, and also the fact that it's going to be held on a beach for 4 days.
Yeah, well, it's been a really interesting discussion, actually, closely followed by a number of many freestyles around the world. Well, the dates, you know, firstly, a lot earlier than usual. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that struck most people. It's about a month earlier.
Yeah.
For most of the Americans, this sounds very good and things. For us here in the UK, it's looking like that's going to be quite good for us as well. And obviously for Ewan, it can't be, you know, the organizer. It can't be much later for him because he has work in the summer, which is why it's in June. For a lot of Europeans, it does seem it's a bit of a clash. Actually, a few people are hinting that they might not be able to make it. But you know, I think just at the end of the day, whenever you have the worlds, there's going to be people that can't make it.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it?
And people are bound to be disappointed. It's just trying to find the best date for the event, really.
The best fit possible, yeah.
Best date possible. And in terms of the beach location, well, that's interesting. I'm hoping personally for more of a Rimini-style red carpet quite far away from the seafront, yep, so you're getting quite decent winds and not too strong and blustery.
Nope.
Because, for example, at the EFCs this year, as we know well, Joe, we were right on the seafront, and the Italians seem to cope with that quite well. They were used to it, but for us, who, you know, we don't really play on the beach very often at all.
Exactly,
not like that anyway. It was exactly. Very, very difficult conditions.
Yeah, I really think that the beach format can work really well for Worlds, as we've seen by the Rimini tournaments, of course. You know, they were great.
That's right, yeah.
Great Worlds, absolutely amazing. You know, that they went back for next year straight after, so it can obviously have worked really well. But the thing about a seafront tournament is that really does put quite a weighty advantage on people who normally play by the seafront, whereas
that's right, yeah,
a tournament that's moved up the beach generally, especially if it's on some sort of playing surface that isn't sand, that can generally accommodate everyone better, even if you're used to playing on grass, because you'll get stronger winds than normal, but it should be consistent,
manageable
conditions.
Really, yeah. Yeah, I think it would be cool to have some of the tournament on grass, but you know, as we know, the organisers did try to have part of the event in the park, but this wasn't possible due to clashes with other events.
Yep.
So the beach sounds good, yeah.
And as we know, a lot of people really love playing on the beach, and
it can
really enhance your game.
And also, it has to be said that Ewan has mentioned that the beaches in Amsterdam are very hard surfaced, aside from the playing field, there'll be lots of space to, you know, practice on and things.
Mm-hmm. That's key.
So it's, you know, it's almost like you're not really playing on sand at all. Sounds like it anyway. But you know, I'm looking forward to next year's Worlds. It should be very good.
Should be shaping up to be a great event. Okay, sure, so moving on from the FPA Worlds to the FPA news. The first item is, as we've talked about before, the disc design contest is open. Now there's a deadline for this, which is the 15th of November. So just to recap for any of you who haven't heard the past episodes or don't know about the contest, it's just basically a contest. It's completely open to anyone. It's more open than open pairs. And anyone can submit their design. It will be going, and there's certain guidelines you have to follow, such as, you know, not using too much ink, too heavy on ink for printing costs, things like that, which speak for themselves. And yep. If you want to see full guidelines for a disc that you can submit, that will be the 2007 official FPA Skystyler, if I'm not mistaken.
You will.
The guidelines for that can be seen on the FPA forum. So check that out if you're wanting to enter.
Do indeed. Also in the FPA news, an elections reminder. They'll be taking nominations for Executive Director, Marketing Director and Treasurer. But regarding this, an official message will be sent out quite soon, so be looking out for that on the Yahoo groups regarding deadlines and how to vote. And nominations, of course.
Of course. So
right, now it's segment. Main segment time.
Yeah.
With none other than a 9-time world freestyle champion. One of the most successful female players of all time. It's Lisa Hunricks. It's a great interview. She's been ranked world number one for some time. She's actually world number two currently, but
ooh, so close.
She's even gone as far as entering the male division this last year's Worlds. That's how good she is.
The open division.
Yeah, we talk about that in the interview. We talk about that. Sorry, open, of course. Right.
So sit back, relax. If you want to get a drink, now's the time to get it. So you can sit back and just enjoy this great interview.
Enjoy. Hello, hello everybody, and welcome to Discast Episode 10's interview. And this month we have none other than the 9-time world champion, world freestyle champion, Lisa Hunricks, over from, she's actually in Portland at the moment in the USA. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well, thanks for having me.
Excellent, yeah, we're delighted to have our first female main interview guest, aren't we, yep, John, on the show?
We certainly are. It's been requested by a number of people, so we hope you all enjoy this interview.
It has, yeah.
We've got plenty of brilliant questions prepared, but just to start, To start us off, Lisa, how and when did you start freestyling?
I started in around 1990-91, and okay. I was an actress at that time and met Randy Sylvie doing a touring bus company Molière play, and I really had literally thrown a frisbee maybe twice before in my life. And I went out to Green Lake and saw him playing with a friend, and that was the first time I ever saw freestyle. And started hanging out with Randy and met the whole Seattle freestyle crew and sat on a blanket on the sidelines for about 3 months. And then one day I put nails on and started throwing the frisbee and having the frisbee thrown to me, and that's how I started.
Excellent. Okay, so you mentioned there that you were an actress before you started freestyling. Do you think your theatre trainings had any impact on the development of your freestyle game?
Absolutely.
I think that sort of thing.
I think it came that the acting skills come out more in the competition part of the sport. In the general playing and fooling around and all that stuff, I think, you know, the learning process and learning how to practice and having that sense of focus, it definitely helped. But definitely in the competition part of things, it is a great background to have had, both from a performance-oriented skill and also just in an ability to concentrate and, you know, put forward your best performance when you know you just have to go.
Yeah. So you also mentioned about seeing Randy Silvey play. And do you feel that your friendship and relationship with him did help to improve your freestyle game and skills a lot faster? Because, you know, he was already an established world-class player.
Absolutely. I never would have seen it or started playing if it wasn't for Randy. But also just having somebody who will take the time to show you things and throw just only with you one-on-one really makes a huge difference. And also the fact that, you know, his skills are very unique and different than anybody else in the world. So the fact that he was super respected and all those things were, you know, made it easier for me to just enter the freestyle community. Of course, lots of other people, especially the Beast, Steve Hayes, were hugely instrumental in teaching me how to play and, you know, just taking the time with me, which is, I think, one of the main things that a incoming jammer has to have is, you know, the sense of confidence that just somebody playing with you will give.
Sure, yeah. Okay, so you won your first world championship title in 1994. So how did this feel after just 4 years of playing?
It felt mostly surprising.
I was going to say, was it a surprise?
It was totally a surprise.
Did it feel it was early in your game?
Yeah, it was really early, and I think it kind of surprised a lot of other people too. But, you know, I would remind you that my partner was Mary Lowry, and she really brought me along. That was the first year that we played together, and a huge developmental moment in my career was when she asked me to play with her. So I had just, I think, started unbecoming a beginner. You know, I just started getting into being maybe an intermediate-ish player when we won the world championships. And I just definitely felt very surprised and, you know, happy. But, the fact that that Mary chose to play with me was a huge confidence booster for me and improved my game in subsequent years a ton.
Yeah, so that was obviously one of the highlights of your career. But what do you think has been the biggest highlight of your career so far? Has there been any one moment or tournament that's particularly standed out to yourself?
In 2000, I ran the World Championships in Seattle with the help of the Seattle community. I was the tournament director. And that year, I also won women's and won mixed pairs with my partners. And that was just a huge, I just felt like that was the biggest accomplishment. I probably would never reach that pinnacle ever again because the challenges and the time that it takes to just put together a tournament and then to be putting together routines and practicing and, you know, having all of those experiences happening at the same time and then to be able to go out and hit it in competition was just hugely rewarding for me, and I just felt like, wow, I don't think I'll ever be able to do that again. So that I thought that was a definite highlight of my career.
Yeah, that's definitely.
But also, I mean, I would have to say that there's no way that any one person runs a tournament. I mean, Mary and I always considered ourselves co-tournament directors, although, there's usually one person who ends up making final decisions on things and kind of coordinating all the details, and that generally was me. But, you know, the fact that we had such a close-knit and tight and a very helpful community in Seattle, I mean, all of us just working together are such a great team. So it's you can't run a tournament without having a really great support staff who is all willing to help and step up to the plate when there are lots of tasks and details to be taken care of.
Yeah, definitely. Lisa, you played a big role. Was it tournament director again in the FPA Worlds for 2005 in Seattle? That was back again. So this obviously was, you know, the second time you'd done that role. So can you just tell us a bit more about it? What sort of the responsibilities did it involve specifically?
In the first part of the year leading up to a big event, you spend a lot of time coordinating with sponsors and, you know, trying to line up all the details early on so that you don't have so many to think about right beforehand. For us in Seattle, we always went forward with the idea that you give the players everything that they need so that they don't have to leave the event, so that the timing works out really great and that the schedule runs on time so that everybody can have the best time and the most non-competition jamming time as possible. So we always tried to just have a kick-ass packet, you know, so that everybody had a great shirt and a great disc and a bunch of, you know, goodies and swag and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that was just for starters. And then during the event, we always wanted to make sure that people had food and had water and had really good juice. And so those were the things, and coffee and, you know, stuff like that. So we always try during our events to make sure that everybody was really well fed and, you know, wanted for nothing. Of course, there's always expense that's involved, and, you know, people have to, you know, as much as we could, we found lodging and things like that. And then some of the other things that are done early on are setting the schedule so that, you know, everybody knows what to expect when, and setting head judges for each category of the competition so that those people come to the tournament prepared to run all rounds of that particular category and administer all the details that go into that, so that that responsibility doesn't fall on the people that are, you know, the tournament organizers, and so that the duties are also sort of spread out over a bunch of people, and, you know, it makes less work for, you know, just one or two or five people. You know, becomes a shared task of 10 people and makes life much easier. So those were some of the things that we try to do in advance of the event.
Okay. So from what you've told us, there seems to be quite an enthusiastic community of jammers over in Seattle. Could you tell us a bit more about what the community is like and how playing in such a community has benefited your game?
Well, the fact that we're all such good friends makes it really fun to just go out and play. And of course, you know, just like all jammers, that's basically, I mean, we love the competition because, you know, we get to see all of our friends once a year or twice a year that we don't get to see all the time. That's the reason that we travel to compete, I think, more than anything, much more than the idea of winning or placing or, you know, all of the win, place, or show, you know, all of those other reasons that you go. You want to shine and, you know, show your best game at a competition. But the thing that makes any freestyle community solid is, you know, your ability to connect with the people that are around you. And during the summertime, especially in Seattle and Portland, it's really fun just to be able to hang out afterwards and, you know, talk about things, or maybe everybody goes out to a Mexican restaurant and, you know, has a margarita and has dinner and, you know, so having those friendships be solid is, you know, just makes it more fun because you're going out to see your friends as well as, you know, do your athletic sport of choice.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, Lisa, and so at the Freestyle World Championships in 2006 in Berlin, of course, you and I think Cindy Kruger it was decided to enter into the open pairs division, is that right?
That's right.
And so what prompted this decision and how did it work out for you guys in the end?
Well, we had been talking about entering open pairs for a number of years. There was definitely a challenge, though, because part of the reason that we play and compete is, as women, we want to have a really good showing in women's pairs just so that people can see that women are at the top of their game and, you know, and are playing really well. So you want to, you know, you want to have a good showing in the women's category. But for our own selves, we wanted to challenge our games and give ourselves that challenge. We felt that we would try to enter open and see how we fared playing against mostly men. Other women have played in the open pairs and have fared really well, but generally it's been when a woman played with a man. And so as a team, we felt that we were really strong in 2005, and we had a number of people that approached us after the event and said that we could have done really well or even won open pairs with what we had done in 2005.
Yeah.
And so that was just a little extra nudge that pushed us over the edge that made us decide that we wanted to give it a whirl in 2006 and that we wouldn't play women's. We had a great routine. We had cut together three different pieces of music, and we felt really great about what we were going to do, and we were happy just giving ourselves the challenge, and we told ourselves before the event that it didn't matter how well we did. We just wanted to be able to play the routine really well. So we played in the prelims, and then we had a really great semi-round. Actually, there was a pre-prelim. A qualifying round.
Qualifying round.
Qualifying round, yeah.
And then there was a prelim round and a semi round. And in the prelim round, we had two drops and we just did everything we wanted to do and we were really happy about it. And in the semi round, we didn't fare as well, so we didn't make it into the finals. We had one of those one of those moments in time where you just look at each other and go, "Oh well."
Yeah.
Better luck next time. You know, where you just have to at some point just smile and go, well, we gave it our best shot. So it remains to be seen whether we'll try again or whether there'll be another opportunity to do that. We haven't talked again about next year yet, but it was definitely a great challenge for us. And we were really happy to be able to go out and actually bust seed in the previous two rounds that we played.
Yeah, definitely. The prelims, didn't you?
That's really cool.
You win that prelim group.
Yeah, we won. Yes,
even
we
ahead
won
of all the
pool,
guys. Yeah.
And, took down a couple of pretty hot teams. So
pretty heavy names.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Well done. Ace stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lisa, on a slightly different note, throughout your career, you seem to have accumulated a few interesting nicknames. Lean Bean, Lisa Pisa, and Lisa Longhair, to name a few. Can you offer any explanation for any of these?
Seems like nicknames sort of, you know, arrive out of what you look like. And I have tall and have long, dark hair. And so the Lean Bean and the Lisa Long Hair all came out of, you know, of what I look like. And Lisa Pisa just seems like a title that anybody named Lisa ends up with at some point in life. I remember being called that as early as when I was about six
or
seven.
Sort of rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. So, Having the long limbs definitely, you know, gives me a bigger window for some of those long and lanky moves. But I guess I don't know how they arrived or who gave those to me. But yeah, those monikers have stuck.
That's brilliant. So onto your freestyle practice. How often do you practice freestyle at the moment, and how has this level of practice changed throughout your career?
I play 3 to 4 times a week, and that has been pretty much the same, I would say, almost throughout my career. There have been certain times when I only played a couple times a week, just because in the wintertime it's a little bit harder to get play space either indoors or the weather's poor outside, and so you don't want to go out. I tend to get cold easier than other people, so my ability to play outside for any length of time in the winter months is limited. And so I choose to go inside and in the winter and play in the gym. So sometimes that timing is dictated by, you know, whether the gym is available or not.
Okay, yeah. Similar situation for us over here, isn't it, Jim?
It is, definitely.
Yeah, I think I think your neck of the woods has a similar rainy sort of winter to what we have here in the Northwest.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we don't get too many months of outdoor jamming, I'm afraid, do we, Jim?
No, we don't.
So you got to take advantage of them when you can.
Yeah,
the summer, try to play, you know, a couple times during the weeknights and then usually both days on the weekends.
Right.
Yeah. So just out of interest there, when you say you play 3 or 4 times a week, how long would you imagine playing for each of those sessions?
On the weeknights, between an hour and a half and a couple hours usually. Mm-hmm. On the weekends, it's probably 2 to 5 hours, depending on how many people are out. Because if you only have 2 or 3 people, you know, to go for 2 or 3 hours, you're going to get a pretty hard workout. If you have 5 or 6 people and you are taking breaks and resting, and you know, maybe you're not all in the same jam at all the same time, but you're playing you know, you're touching the disc less, you know, your opportunities to run are a little bit fewer because you're co-oping, you can stay out and play for a longer time.
So are there any other sort of sporting activities or fitness regimes that you carry out in your spare time and have a positive impact?
Yes,
on your freestyle gameplay?
In addition to my freestyle, I go to a gym, a fitness club, and a couple times a week, and I take a step class that has either weights or stretchy bands or stuff like that. Okay. For a long time, I was also doing yoga twice a week, and I have just committed myself to starting to stretch and doing yoga once again because it really helps me to avoid injury and pain. Yeah. So those are the other things that I do on a pretty regular basis. And I ride my bike to work, which is about 5 miles.
Wow, that's quite an achievement.
That's that's a good workout then over the course of the whole week.
pretty active. I like to stay that way.
Definitely.
You know, keeps the head clear.
That's great.
That's all right.
Okay, so moving on from your own personal freestyle career to sort of a more broader picture, I guess. What are your views and opinions on the current situation for women's freestyle?
Well, yeah, it's always a challenge for women to try and get more women into the sport, just as it's a challenge for just freestylers in general to get more people into the sport. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about what is it that makes makes more guys gravitate to the sport, you know, more than apparently women do. You know, some would argue that women have even better or are more equipped to freestyle. But I don't know what it is. Maybe there's just an ability to try something new that's a little more readily apparent for men than it is for women. There's always that learning curve, and just trying to get somebody interested to come out and play for more than once or twice is just a challenge. And I don't know whether it's a man-woman thing or it's just an in general people thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're always happy when we see new women. Bianca and Silvia Caruso, Bianca in Germany and Silvia in Italy are really, it's really great to see women up and coming and doing really great moves and progressing really quickly in their game and getting lots and lots of positive response from the whole community because people just want to see more women come in. And there have been so many amazing women players that, you know, life changes or you have a child or something, and so much less able to travel to events. And so a lot of the amazing women players that are still playing, we just don't see that often because they're, you know, they're doing different things in their personal lives.
That's true.
Because we were surprised at, you know, pleasantly surprised at that there was quite a few female jammers when we went to the EFCs this year that we didn't know about. Europeans, such as Bianca and Sylvia and a few others. Mm-hmm. So that was certainly positive.
Certainly was. So just on the same topic, how do you see the female freestyle game developing over the next few years? Do you think there'll ever be an equal number of male and female players?
It's really great to see such an advance in the sport in Europe. And I at this point, you know, I think there's so many of us Americans that are just looking to Europe to be to lead the sport into, you know, the next decade or so. So the fact that, you know, those freestyle communities there are cultivating their women players just as they're cultivating their men players and, you know, attracting more and more people into the sport in general, whether they be men or women, is really encouraging. And it's great to see the sport growing so much there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, definitely. So a bit of a different question now. What are your favorite types of music to jam to? And once you've got music that you like, how do you go about this? How do you go about intertwining this with your freestyle play and routines?
Are we talking about jamming or competition?
Both really. Yeah, both.
Well,
do you use music when you're jamming?
Yes, absolutely. It's for me. I just enjoy it so much better. I mean, I just enjoy it so much more when there's music because it gives you another element to incorporate into your game. if you're hitting things to the beat, then that's even more fun. And, you know, music that's can right, just yeah. be really inspiring that way. So the particular music that I like, I would categorize as disco. Disco or funk or rock. A little less interested in hearing oldies that much, but I like kind of some club music, a little bit of hip hop. I like a good mix because then, you know, it just inspires you to do different things with your game depending on what the music's doing. So that's really fun when jamming. And then in routines, in the last few years, I've really preferred playing to at least two or potentially three or four tunes, you know, just cutting different tunes together so that a bit of a dynamic and some changeability in that gets incorporated into the routine with the change of mood that, you know, music will help set.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we also hear that you're quite a traveller. So what countries have you jammed in around the world, and which jams in these countries have been the most memorable for yourself?
Well, I've been to Italy 3 times, and I adore Italy. It's just such a beautiful country, and Italian people are so friendly and warm, and the events that have been organized there have just been so much fun. I really love Italy. I also have played in France, in Paris. I don't think we were supposed to play at the base of the Eiffel Tower, but there's a beautiful green there, and we just couldn't help ourselves. So we definitely have played there. My father lives in Brazil, so I've jammed on the beaches of Brazil.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great to have familial units jealous. Living abroad. And my mom also lives in Hawaii, so I go to Hawaii and get to play on the beaches there on occasion, or on the grass there, as the case may be.
What sort of reception do you get when you're jamming in these places where the people have never seen it before?
You know, the usual shock at first. And then, you know, curiosity. Definitely
we get a lot of that.
A curiosity that, especially from kids, you know, that want to see what it is you're doing, and just have the really wide eyes about that. and as much as you can, you know, stopping and kind of just showing people what you're doing, you're spinning it on your finger, or you're rolling it across your body. And always a positive reception.
Brilliant.
That's great. Okay, so to kind of finish off now, what are your hopes for the future of freestyle in general, especially following the freestyle explosion that's gone on in Europe over the last few years?
Well, I'd love to see the sport continue to expand and grow. And it's great to see so many more people getting interested in it, because the more people that are interested in it, eventually I think that we'll be able to attract sponsors more, because they'll see that, you know, it's got a pretty wide following, and as the sport grows, then we'll be able to have our trips paid for by these sponsors. You know, because it's a we just love to play so much. Obviously, we're going to travel to go to these places, but it would be great to see the sport recognized in a you know, in legitimate forums. And the growth of the sport seems like it's going to, you know, make that happen. So it's great to see that explosion in Europe and the interest that's there.
Okay, so thanks a lot, Lisa, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very flattering and very pleased to be able to join you guys. I love you. You guys are doing good work.
Thanks a lot. Cheers. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the show. Indeed. Interesting to hear a female voice on Discast for a change.
Definitely.
Well, thanks, and I'm honored to have been the first.
Great. Okay, thanks a lot, Lisa.
Okay.
Thanks. Cheers. Okay, once again, thank you very much, Lisa, for taking the time out
so much
from your busy jamming and sporting schedule to talk to us.
Thanks a lot. Okay, I hope you all enjoyed that. Very in-depth interview. Very interesting as well, actually.
Slightful, as always.
As always. And now it's an update on the Guest of Jammer competition, which we've been running for most of this year. Well, to start us off, sadly, there were no correct entries from last month's clues. But the answer was, Joe?
It was Pipo Lopez.
So none of you got that. No Pipo Boffins around, sadly.
No, that was a shame. But never fear, because coming next month in episode 11, we will announce the overall prize for the Discuss Guess the Jammer competition, as well as giving our final clue. So we're going to give you a final clue in next month's episode. That's episode 11. And then in episode 12, the last episode of the year, you can expect to hear the overall winner of the prize draw. That should be great. And you never know, someone could be receiving an extra special Discast-related Christmas present there. So who's in the draw so far, John?
Well, there's Alexander Alexandrov, otherwise known as Alex Veer from Russia. Fabio Sarna, the much-loved Italian. Lisa Hunricks, believe it or not, our main segment interviewee for today. And young Israeli jammer Omer Rosenbaum. So if you want to be joining them on that list, you want to be in consideration for the prize, listen closely next month to the clues and get your entries in. Last chance.
Absolutely. Now we're going to move on to our extremely popular how-to segment. It's back in full force this month.
It is. Sorry about the lack of how-to last month, but you know.
But this one's good enough to make up for two episodes at least.
At least. It's brilliant.
What is it this month, John?
It's Larry Imperiali just giving loads of tips on mob-opping.
Exactly.
The much-loved pastime at the end of freestyle tournaments and during, of course. So anytime when you get together in the park with other jammers.
Absolutely.
It's one of the most exciting and fun things to do in freestyle.
It really is at the heart of jamming, isn't it?
It is. So here's Larry.
Hi, this is Larry Imperiali, and with the snow falling here in Colorado, it looks like a great time to talk about mob-opping. Now, you know what mob-opping is, probably, and it's certainly more than just a few people playing together at the park, doing individual moves, passing it once in a while. It's a group of people, maybe three to however many you have, trying to play together as a group, as one, passing the disc back and forth, running, being very active in terms of movement. Now, when I go to a tournament, my favorite part is waiting for that last catch of that last routine so we can all go out and mob-op. When you hit a good mob-opping run with your comrades running down the field, it's really like no feeling in any sport I've ever experienced. Maybe a little bit like powder skiing, where you have that incredible run and you just look over at who's there and go, what just happened? Or I don't even remember what happened, and that would be even better. So today, hopefully, I can pass you on a few tips on how to make it more fun for you the next time you have a mob opportunity. Now, not all conditions or situations are ideal for mob-opping. I really personally think the ideal number is three players, certainly at a minimum, up to six. Certainly, you can have fun with more, but then it becomes more and more challenging. Also, you need a place to play that's not too crowded, lots of running room. You don't necessarily have to have wind, but it definitely makes it more fun, and hopefully, at least whether it's strong or light, it's coming from a consistent direction. And most importantly, you need some players willing to run and hustle, because that's really what it takes, and hopefully they have knowledge of some basic mob-opping skills. Now, I was trying to think of a single word that defines a good mob-op, at least in my view, a word you can sort of keep in your mind as your primary goal while mob-opping. And maybe you already know what that is, but for me, that word is flow. Flow, you know it when you see it. You know, there's few drops, lots of consecutive exchanges between players, delay sets, hoops, legovers to a kick, brush, kicks, rolls, big catches, and the moves transition from each other seamlessly. Very consecutively. Well, flow is our primary goal then in a mob-op. One of the most important things that comes to mind to me is positioning. and that takes two forms. One, being in the right place at the right time to get the disc and set up exchanges. And two, and probably more importantly, being in the right place so you're not in the way of other players on your MOBOP group. Now, regarding being in the right place at the right time, a good positioning strategy often, especially if there's a breeze, is to be side by side to the other players, maybe slightly staggered. There's nothing quite like, you know, running hard with a player or two on your side and the disc just sort of bouncing from one player to the other with a roll, a brush, a kick, culminating maybe in a hoop to a big catch. And for me, a run like that is probably the most single fun thing in freestyle. I can think back to some tournaments recently, and almost more memorable than moves I did in competition were the mob-ups afterwards and the people that were in those mob-ups. Another aspect of being in the right place at the right time is communicating with your the people you're mob-opping with, saying you're here, maybe off to the side if they can't see you, you need to let them know, that type of thing. Maybe you let them know you're going to hoop it. Little spontaneous bits of communication can really help. And better yet, if you can try and stay in the field of vision of the other player. For example, if you're too far behind them, they might have to look back to see you and take their eye off the disc for a second. So it's always better to be in their viewing area if you can. Now the second and probably the most important aspect of positioning is trying to stay out of the way of the other players. Especially, don't block that running space and the running room directly upwind of a player. Also be aware of a player's space. It may not be just directly upwind. For example, I sometimes do some steep kicks directly on my downwind side. So if a player's hanging out there waiting to get the disc, and I go to set up a kick set to someone, they'll likely be in the way. So definitely learn the strengths, weaknesses, and the preferences of the people you jam with so you can set them up so it's easy for them to participate in the mob-op. One last point regarding positioning, and that is to try and keep moving at all the time just to open up possibilities of exchanges. Sometimes maybe run behind the group, switch sides, or whatever feels right when you don't have the disc. If you're upwind, be ready to hoop, certainly, leg over, fluff, or set the player downwind. If you're the downwind player, be ready for the disc. Maybe try and send it back out with a brush or a swoop, roll, or kick. And then, after you, let's say, roll it out, run forward, take the place of that upwind player, and do it again, sort of a rotation scheme. The second key point next to positioning is the fact that in mob-opping, rookies and pros can actually have a lot of fun playing together. But if you're a newer player, it can sometimes be intimidating to join a mob-op. The key there is, I think, is sticking to your basics at first. It's not about going out there and showing off what your best move is every time, but rather focusing on maintaining the flow. And that's our overriding theme here. When the disc comes to you, don't try some new brush you've been working on, at least at first. Focus on getting it to the other players with simple brushes, simple under the leg sets, simple roll passes at first, even if it's not consecutive, because if you drop it, fumble it, that's going to break more flow than just doing a the set to a chest roll to someone. And really, think of a pinball game when you're mob-opping. And that's exciting part of mob-op, not from doing a hard move and then passing it to the guy next to you, but instead linking various passes and brushes between players very consecutively, even if they're easy passes. That's where the difficulty comes from, the consecutiveness of the passes between the players, not necessarily from the difficulty of the brush itself. And if you try difficult brushes constantly, it's very tough to get a good flow. Like pinball, the disc should bounce around from player to player, never stopping in one spot for too long. Certainly there's a time and place for risky moves, big catches, risky brushes, that type of thing. Sometimes even an indie or two is appropriate. Just don't be a black hole. That's the greatest sin in a mob-op. When a disc comes to you, it should come out quickly. A quick throw after a catch, a quick brush pass, maybe even off of a very quick move. Players that often do an extended Indy when the disc comes to them in a mob op just aren't that much fun to mob op with. It's about the passing, not about how great you can do an Indy, even though certainly a few Indies here or there are appropriate. Mob opping is all about the group trying to play as one, not individuals jamming within a group. Really, just in general, don't think too much when mob opping. Go with the instincts, and those instincts will certainly improve with time. Just feel the flow, focus on the flow, and just go with it. You know, if it feels right, catch a co-op early. You know, do an indie. You know, you'll develop a feeling when to end a co-op at the most dramatic time. It's always better probably to catch it too early than maybe trying to catch it one brush too late when it's on the ground. Another key point, make good throws and give good sets. Make the people around you play better. If you know a newer player does nothing but clock, probably don't set them with a low spin counter in that mob op if you want to keep the flow going. You know, maybe afterwards work with them on something they can do with a counter set. But in the mob op, focus on flow, set people with easy things so they can play to their strengths. So to play to their strengths, definitely good throws can be used to help create flow with a mob op and to set up those brushing runs that we strive for. So certainly throwing good Zs is never a mistake because it gives the receiver of the disc many options as to what to do with it. So that's never a bad choice. But some low Z angle throws, other creative throws are often very useful to set up brushing runs and certainly add variety. And a disc with a little angle that's ready to brush or roll is usually more fun in a co-op certainly than a flat disc since it encourages more movement just by the nature of it being on an angle. A couple final points. You should definitely learn enough of the other spin or your non-dominant spin. So at least when it comes to you in a mob op, you can at least brush it out, give it to someone else with a simple pass. Remember, your main goal is to keep the flow going. Even if you're the only counter player in a group of clock players, at least you'll get chances to keep the flow going on brushing runs with some hoops, leg overs, a simple clock brush, maybe a roll. You learn how to do a roll with the opposite spin by doing enough of that, and finally big catches, even if you almost get none of your dominant spin. Another point, don't ever force it. You know, maybe you want to do a chest roll right off of a set, but it's not quite there. If you go for it, you're probably going to drop it, flub it, and it's going to break the flow. So you're better off breaking consecutivity at that point, maybe going to a delay, getting control again, and setting up a roll. And that'll keep the flow going better rather than trying to do something consecutive off of a really bad set and dropping it. So in summary, I think there are four key points to achieving great flow in a co-op. Number one, positioning. Positioning so you're in the right place to get the disc and not the wrong place so you're blocking the other players. Second, focus on maintaining the flow above all else if you're a newer player by sticking to the basics, then build on it. Thirdly, think pinball machine. Pass it quickly and do easy moves, especially at first, to build flow. Don't be a black hole and make it easy for the other players around you to play better. And lastly, learn a little bit with the other spin so you can at least pass a delay, swoop it, and brush it out. So those are my tips, mainly how to get with the flow on mob opping. Remember, it's all about flow. There's a couple great articles on the FPA forum. If you go to the Learn to Jam forum and key in mob op, there's some information written there by Tommy, myself, Lisa, and a few others that have these tips, some of these tips described. But remember, the goal is have fun, be ready to run, and keep the flow. Thanks so much, and looking forward to the next Mob Op Jam with you.
Okay, thanks a lot again, Larry. That was an absolutely brilliant segment. Very insightful. For people like ourselves, who are quite inexperienced at tournaments and inexperienced at mob-opping, it's really useful to hear things like that.
really helpful, and I'm sure that even the experts can pick up a few tips from it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they actually will be able to. Oh, now it's time for my favourite segment of the month. It's Frisbee Fact.
Is it your favourite segment? Oh, excellent.
Well, in joint favourite segment with about five others. But anyway, it's Joe who's going to be
It is.
Alarming us this month with the fact.
Well, it is perhaps alarming. I don't know. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is a very offbeat fact. As I say, as with all our facts, it's unusual, of course. But this one is just a little titbit, as you might say, that I found on the internet. And it's the reason I picked it out is because it has a slight connection with something I'm very interested in, which I'll tell you all about in a moment. And so the prestigious University of London,
mm-hmm.
and more specifically King's College London.
Oh, just a quick note of interest here. I've in my university applications, that's one of the universities I've applied to.
Well, there we go then. It really
It must be good.
Both of us. Now they have an extremely well thought of and reputable department of philosophy, and in their department of philosophy, philosophy being one of the subjects I'm taking in further education at the moment, and I'm really enjoying. I'm well into it. One of their philosophy experts is the first real person in the world that I've ever heard of called Frisbee. Yes, indeed. Female Professor Dr. Frisbee Sheffield is one of their top professors.
Oh, wicked.
And I know we've heard one of our earliest ever Frisbee facts, John, was about an animated character whose name was Frisbee and then changed to, what was it, Brisbee or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Because of possible copyright. But this young woman's parents obviously didn't bother about that because her name is spelt Frisbee.
Oh, brilliant.
Dr. Frisbee Sheffield is a philosophy professor at the University of London. If you want to know about her works, you'll see that Frisbee, as she's academically referred to, has a interest in a variety of ancient philosophers, especially Plato, has just finished a book on Plato's Symposium, forthcoming with OUP, entitled Plato's Symposium, The Ethics of Desire. She's now working on a new edition of various philosophy books for the publishers Cambridge Texts in the History of Philosophy. So if you're ever lucky enough to pick up a book by her, which the only person who hears this is who's ever likely to pick up a book by her is probably me, considering philosophy. But there she is, Dr. Frisbee Sheffield.
Well, Joe, if I end up at King's College University, I'll make sure we get her on Discast one day.
Yes,
I'll hunt her down.
Please
get her on the show.
If you want to email Frisbee, you can do so at frisbee.sheffield. No, I'm not going to give her email address out, even though it is on the internet.
Brilliant. That's it for this month.
That is it. It's
been a good, fun episode.
It's been a thoroughly enjoyable episode to put together, I must say.
It certainly has, actually, yeah.
Interview and How To were of the highest quality this month. And, yeah, I've enjoyed it very much.
Me too. Hope you lot have. We'll be back in November for episode 11.
We will. Ooh, close to a full year series.
Oh yeah, wicked. We'll have to have a special anniversary episode for episode 13.
Yeah, I think definitely. I'm looking forward to that already.
Me too.
Okay, we need to outro now. So, what's your name?
My name is John Coxett.
And my name is Joe McRae.
We'll see you all next month.
Yeah, definitely. John, I'm just going to ask you, do you think we should skip the question and go on to question seven because it links in?
Use the first part of question seven and then the question eight, yeah?
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And then we'll put number six in later on.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, got that coordinated.